right, come set. Kicks the 1-1 pitch. Fly ball deep left field. Yes, sir. There she goes.
Hello and welcome, Blue Jay fans, to episode 18 of No Longer There She Goes. We've decided to rename the podcast as Section 138. We'll have Blue Jay Center explain that a bit more right now.
Yeah, so just a creative new name for our podcast, Section 138, for those of you who don't know, is the section that Jose Bautista hit his decisive home run in Game 5 of the 2015 ALDS against the Rangers. Basically, the new generation of Blue Jays fans, that's probably the most iconic moment. So we just wanted to have a name where everyone can relate to in recent Blue Jays success history, so that the new generation of Blue Jays fans typically are the ones who are listening to this podcast. Just a creative change to the name.
Yeah, before we continue, as always, I'm Mark Cauley from 360 Blue Jays News and Bluebird Banter. We're always joined by Blue Jays Center, who you just heard from, Blue Jays Nation, and everything Blue Jays. Today, we're going to be bantering about the trade deadline. It just passed. We'll talk about what moves the Blue Jays made, whether we think those moves were good or bad, the return of them. We'll discuss that a bit. And I also wanted to touch on Marcus Stroman. Obviously, there's been a lot going on with his quick pitch and the way he's been reacting to stuff, and there's been a lot of controversy, so we were going to touch on that. And I think that'll be a bit of a shorter topic, so why don't we start with that? So pretty much my viewpoint on this is Stroman is a very eccentric pitcher. He's a very good pitcher, obviously, a great ERA this season, 3.19, but I think he needs to take it down a notch. And I know this is his personality. This is the way he's been for the entirety of his time in professional baseball, but I do think he's kind of taking it a step too far. And what I mean by this is because, you know, there's 149 other starting pitchers in Major League Baseball, or more if you count some spot starters and long relievers. All these people, all these players don't have the same type of reaction towards certain things as Stroman does. You know, I don't consider myself old school, and I like the game the way it is. I like the game. I like emotions in the game. Like, I read an article recently talking about Jose Bautista and how he thinks, like, the game is not played by robots. It's played by humans, and we need to show those emotions. But I do think that what Stroman has been doing has been getting a bit out of hand. Obviously, he has his quick pitch, which within the rules, it looks like as if it's within Major League Baseball rules. Obviously, you have to expect some players aren't going to like it. Some umpires aren't simply going to like it. So I think when that happens, when an umpire makes a call about that, when a player gets upset with it, you know, beat them on the field. Like, show them that if you want to beat me, then beat me. Don't just complain about it. And I think, like, we saw recently with Tim Anderson of the White Sox against Stroman. Anderson was walking away. He was walking towards the dugout. It looks like he said something to Stroman. I don't think Stroman had to react the way he did with calling after him. Like, what did I do? I think he should have either non-verbally kind of stared at him or just, you know, turn around. I definitely like his passion and I like the way he plays, but I think at this point it seems every single start we're getting something like this, and I don't think it should be that often. I think he should pick and choose his battles. As far as how the Blue Jays move forward with this, how Stroman moves forward with this, I don't know if anything has to be specifically done. We saw Bautista in his first few years with the Blue Jays. He still is now, but to a lesser extent, he has a lot of emotions. You know, the bat flip comes to mind. There against the Orioles, there are so many instances where he's had those fiery emotions. Yet in the past few years, he's kind of taken them down a notch. He's kind of reserved them for the important times. You know, he has that signature stare, but he's kind of conserved that a bit. And I think I'd like to see the same thing with Strowman. And again, I don't consider myself an old school guy. I do like the passion in the game, and I do like the passion in the game that Marcus Strowman brings, but I do think he needs to take it down a notch. So that's my little bit. What do you guys think about that?
Well, first of all, 360, I believe you just, you nailed it right at the start of it. You said this is who Marcus Strowman is, and that's the main point of this, and that is why I do not think he will change. It may affect him, it may not. I mean, obviously, we all know Strowman is very enthusiastic. He's very passionate when he pitches. We've seen this during the season a couple times as well. It could be affecting his quick pitch as well. You know, his altercation with umpires has maybe been affecting him. We saw couple weeks ago against Oakland, or last week with Will Little. That wasn't a quick pitch, though, but he was very upset with the strike zone, and then there you go again. You know, he definitely didn't have to say anything. I'm just referring to what you brought up, the Tim Anderson situation a couple days ago, as well as his quick pitch. We've seen him get in altercations with umpires. He's been pretty mad, and obviously a lot of people would definitely want Strowman to calm down. Maybe it will help him in the near future, but I just don't think he's going to change. I think he's very passionate about how he feels about himself as well. I know he knows exactly what he's doing, and I guess he just wants to send a message to everyone out there that this is who I am. I'm not going to change, so don't try. But as far as to reality, when you said maybe it would be better if he would calm down, it may help him, as you referenced Jose Bautista as well, as he's calmed down in the past couple of years. I mean, we don't really know, because we've never really seen Marcus Strowman calm before. Obviously, he's always fired up. So it's pretty hard to imagine him not being fired up and passionate about the way he pitches. And it's another reason for me not to believe or convince myself that he will even consider changing his mind and, you know, taking it down a notch. But that's my thoughts on it.
Yeah, I agree with what you said about how Strowman's not going to change. You know, he's been like this since he came up to the big leagues. You know, he's always been a passionate guy. He's always been a very good pitcher as well. So I don't think he's going to change part of him. But one thing, just touching on the whole quick pitch and his little pause in his windup, I don't really think that's anything bad. I mean, like you said, 360, that's within the major league rule books, or that's within the rules. It's legal. I think umpires especially need to, like, figure this out. You know, he's clearly going to keep doing it. I think umpires need to realize this is part of his windup. And, you know, you can't keep awarding time to players, which is one thing that Strowman's been very aggravated about in his last few starts. You can't keep awarding time to players who are fooled by his windup. You know, if they get angry at his windup, like you said, beat him on the field. He's a very passionate guy. I don't think he'll change anything, but I think the main problem here is the umpires. They need to realize that this is how Strowman pitched. Like I said, he's not going to change. They need to realize, you know, pitchers have different windups. We've seen Johnny Cueto in the past have very strange windups. We've seen Roberto Osuna do different types of pauses in his windup. So this is just another one of those windups that umpires are going to need to figure out. And I think once they do that, this whole thing will settle down and Strowman will just keep doing what he's doing.
Yeah, I don't believe Strowman will change either. I think this is just how he's been his whole career. I do think he needs to be a little more selective on when he has these episodes. I mean, when he's talking on the mound and cussing to himself and all that, doing the little shimmy, the windup, I understand how that might rub people the wrong way, and certainly did with Tim Anderson. But the only problem I have with that is if Tim Anderson's upset and pouting after a strikeout, I mean, Marcus Strowman, you got to leave Tim Anderson in 601 OPS alone, pouting on the bench. You can't respond to that. I mean, how often do you see star players respond to basically guys who are here because they have no options? The other team has no options. So I believe if you're Strowman, I mean, you can do whatever you want as long as you're not directing it to other players. I think Pete should have not responded, like you said, 360, just nod along and move on, because he had already won the battle. I just think that you can do what you can on the mound and to keep hitters off balance. That's the point of the game. But when you're responding to other players and creating confrontations, that's where I draw the line personally. And as for the umpires, they got to get that right. It's happened so many times this year. I think four or five times it's happened. It's happened with LA, against Houston, so on and so forth. So the umpires just got to get that right. It's in his right to have that kind of a windup. And that's pretty much all I got to say about this. You guys nailed it.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I like his emotions, and they're certainly justified at times, but I think he has to pick his fights in the places where they're justified. And I think at a lot of places, you know, he struck out Tim Anderson. Why is he fighting him as soon as he's walking back to the dugout? Like, he called time inappropriately. He called time when Strowman was halfway through his windup, and Strowman kind of showed him up. He struck him out. He was saying, you know, like, I'm better than you on the field, so don't complain about it. And I think Strowman should have taken that as his response to it instead of actually, like, yelling at him. But again, like, this is justified at some points. I just don't think it's justified all the time. But it seems like we don't vary in opinion too much. We do slightly, but not too much. So we'll move on from that topic to our broader topic for today, the trade deadline. So the Blue Jays made two key moves. They moved Joe Smith to Cleveland in exchange for two minor leaguers, Thomas Pannone and Samad Taylor. And then they also moved Francisco Liriano to the Houston Astros in exchange for Nori Aoki and Teoscar Hernandez. The front office didn't perform as many trades as I thought they would. I thought, you know, the Royals were interested in Estrada. The Royals were interested in Happ, I believe, at 1.2, and Happ has another year on his contract, so it's less likely that he would be moved. But there are, again, position players that could have been moved, some with expiring contracts, like Jose Bautista, although he does have 10-5 rights, and he could still yet be moved since he's been placed on revocable waivers. But kind of disclaimer there, revocable waivers mean almost nothing. So he still could be moved, but I expected the Blue Jays to make more moves at the deadline. As far as my thoughts on the Smith deal, I think the Blue Jays could have got more for Smith. I mean, he only has 1 year left, or he's a free agent after this season, but they got two low-level minor leaguers. Thomas Pannone is ranked 21st overall in Toronto's system, which I think is really low for a guy, especially for in exchange for a guy like Smith, who's such a good pitcher, such a good reliever. I don't know that much actually about these guys. The other guy, Samad Taylor, a shortstop, he hasn't even got higher than low A ball with Cleveland. So I think they could have gotten more for this guy. But what do you guys think?
Well, as far as the deadline goes, obviously you said that you expected the front office to be more active. I mean, obviously maybe another trade here or there would have been good, but I had a feeling that this team wasn't going to be as active as they said they were. Obviously they want to look forward to next year, and I knew they weren't going to trade as many people as people expected, but obviously there is still a chance you can move Marco Estrada and Jose Bautista now. Obviously it's just going to be a little more difficult with the waiver trade deadline, as you mentioned as well, with Bautista with the 10-5 rights, but I'll ask you guys a little bit more about that later. Yeah, and as it goes to the the trade deadline, I'll start with the Francisco Liriano trade. Obviously, I really like the deal. I mean, you get Nori Aoki, who probably wasn't even the main focus on this deal. It was more about Teoscar Hernandez, but you know, Aoki does his job. He's batting .272 in 71 games. It'll be interesting though how he fits with this team, because you don't typically see a fifth outfielder. But yeah, like I said, he's also yet to play. He may play tonight, who knows. But yeah, it'll be interesting how he fits. And the Teoscar Hernandez really, you know, gets me excited about this trade. You know, he's 23 years old. He's also MLB ready, which is the best part about it. And he hit his first MLB home run last year, Major League home run, first career, at the Rogers Center against Francisco Liriano, which was pretty ironic. And he's only played one game this season. He hasn't even had an at-bat. And with Buffalo and the Houston affiliate of AAA, he's batting .273. And the thing like I said, I really like how Hernandez is MLB ready. You know, he can be ready to come to this team as early as tomorrow if there's an injury, and pretty much most likely to be a September call-up. And he's also a speedy outfielder, which brings speed, which I think the Jays have been missing for a little bit, and which I think they are in need of. And as it goes to the Smith deal, you said they can get a little more they could have gotten more for him, as you think. But obviously, I mean, I think the Blue Jays did this just because they were really desperate to move him or they really wanted to. Obviously, you could have debated to yourself, you know, if you're not going to get much for him, why not even trade him away? But I don't think adding two prospects, two lower-level prospects who have a chance to meet the big leagues isn't as bad as people think. Obviously, Pinone has played in AA and single-A this season. He's a lefty. He's 8-1 with an ERA of 196. And Taylor, he's a second baseman. He spent AA and A-ball, as 360 mentioned. He's batting 295 with four home runs and 19 RBI. So obviously, the Smith deal, in my mind, I agree with you. Maybe they could have gotten a little more, but it just shows that the Blue Jays were really keen on moving Joe Smith. But who knows? Maybe you give these two a chance. Hopefully, they're up in the big leagues one day. But that's my opinion on the trade deadline.
Yeah, everything Blue Jays. You pretty much nailed everything I was going to say. As a whole, I think the trade deadline was okay for the Blue Jays. The Joe Smith deal, I was not a fan of, and I made it quite obvious on my Instagram account. When it happened, you know, for a guy with a 3.11 ERA and a 1.09 whip with the Blue Jays, he was phenomenal. He had the injury that kept him out for about a month and a half, but he was, like I said, phenomenal in his time with the Blue Jays, and I would have liked to see them get a prospect that was higher level than the two that they got. You know, they didn't really get much, just a double-A guy and a low-A ball player. I mean, it's better than nothing, I guess, if you're looking at it at an optimistic standpoint, but still wasn't a fan of that deal. And then the Francisco Liriano trade, I don't know what Ross Atkins did to the Houston general manager, but he pulled off a steal, in my opinion, with that deal. You know, Liriano, he does have a wicked slider. He is a very reliable guy. You know, he's not had a good year this year with the Blue Jays, but he definitely can pitch well, especially down the stretch in their Houston bullpen. And Nori Aoki, I agree with what you said, everything Blue Jays, not the main focus of the deal. I don't expect him to play much, to be honest, with the Blue Jays. He could start here and there. He probably will. I mean, if they have five outfielders, they'll probably just end up sending him down to AAA if he has options. I'm not 100% sure on that. But then the prospect, Teoscar Hernandez, I was actually really excited about because he was ranked ninth in the Houston organization and now, I believe, fifth in the Blue Jays organization. Yeah, and he was really good in AAA with a 279 batting average, 12 home runs, and 44 RBIs in 347 plate appearances. So he definitely is a good prospect. I expect him to be up maybe as a September call-up, who knows, kind of unlikely, maybe with Dwight Smith Jr. maybe getting the call-up, but anyways, he is definitely a good prospect who I think has a pretty good future with this organization, and I definitely see him as, you know, not a key piece for the Blue Jays in the future, but definitely a guy that one day we can look back and say, wow, that Francisco Liriano trade really did pan out for us in the future, these days.
Yeah, you mentioned it. You nailed it right off the bat. They got a steal for Francisco Liriano. I mean, you traced this all the way back to last year's deadline. Essentially, what Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins did was trade away Drew Hutchison, who's a Major League 6 starter, in exchange for a year of Francisco Liriano, a year in which he pitched great for them down the stretch last year and in that wild card game. People tend to forget he actually got the win in that wild card game, got the big five outs against the Orioles. You also got back Harold Ramirez and Reese McGuire, two top 10 prospects from the Pirates last year. Although I'm not a big prospect guy, I don't watch games or follow that often, but I'm told they're not having the greatest of years, either of them. But, you know, hopefully they'll make the move up sometime. I love the Teoscar Hernandez move. Hernandez will be major league ready. He'll be here September the latest, according to Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro, pending an injury. And also, it's a good move because you're thinking about they need two outfielders next year. Well, at least one. I'm not a big Steve Pearson left field guy. You're going to have Anthony Alford ready next year. Hopefully, you might have Dwight Smith Jr., as you mentioned. Now you have Teoscar Hernandez. So that's basically a surplus of very young and athletic outfielders, which also brings a smile to my face. And also in that deal, you get Nori Aoki back. Personally, I'm not too big of a fan of Aoki. I have a feeling he was just a throw-in in this deal. He had been a good major league hitter throughout his career, but And also, he had some great numbers in Japan when he played there. But to me, I see no difference with him and Ezequiel Carrera. The only two main differences that I see with him and Carrera are the birth date and the nationality. Other than that, they basically are the same player. None of them have a lot of power. None of them are great fielders. Both can run. Aoki's going to make $5.5 million next year. In my opinion, I 100% believe the Blue Jays will non-tender him, pretty much give him away for nothing at the offseason. I just see him as a balance of the salaries. And as for the other deal, Joe Smith was traded for prospects, obviously Tom Pannone and Samad Taylor, yeah. Yeah, you mentioned they're not even top 30 prospects in the Indians organization. But the thing I find extremely interesting about this deal is because Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro drafted these guys when they were in Cleveland. I'm not sure about Taylor, but I know for a fact that they drafted the pitcher Tom Pannone. So, I mean, maybe these guys followed their body of work. They saw them play in college and through pro ball, so maybe they know something that we don't know about these guys. And I think that they see something with these two guys that they could bring to value here in Toronto. So although it may not look good right off the bat, I mean, you trade a great reliever like Joe Smith for two guys who aren't even in the top 30 and not even in the top 20 of Toronto, who's not known as the greatest farm system, although it's been better lately. I think you got to keep your eyes open because Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, they, like I said, they groomed these guys. They were there since they even started. So maybe they should deserve a chance to see how they'll be brought up because I have a feeling that Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins see something that the whole world doesn't see with these two prospects. Overall, I like this. I like deadline. It's a solid deadline. I'm going to bring this thought later on in this podcast. The Blue Jays were not able to move Marco Estrada. I'm going to talk about him being possibly a fifth starter for this team next year, maybe, because, like we mentioned, this was a buyer's market for starting pitching. And the fact that Marco Estrada wasn't moved tells me that there really wasn't any interest in him. Like, no team wanted to give up prospects for him. So later on, I'm going to discuss maybe possibly bringing Estrada back for next year and hoping to do the same thing. But overall, this is my assessment of the trade deadline. Yeah, I expected another move or two. I expected Estrada to be traded. He was not. But overall, I'm not too disappointed with these moves. I love the Liriano trade, and I still think that the Joe Smith acquisitions for Joe Smith are still going to be they may surprise us because, as I mentioned before, Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro might know a little something more about these guys than we all know already.
Yeah, and beyond that, it is very hard to assess prospects. Like, really, like, Kevin Pillar was drafted in the 32nd round. You might think, and a lot of baseball executives and scouts thought that he was not going to be major league talent. That's why 31 rounds and hundreds of picks before him passed on him. And then the Blue Jays, you know, obviously they saw something in him. I don't know how much credit we should give to them for actually drafting him. They could have picked, you know, the pick right after him or the pick right before him, a different player, and things would have ended up completely different. But yeah, I think it is valuable that both Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro worked in the Indians organization. And they did draft Thomas Pannone. They drafted him in the ninth round of the 2013 draft. That was after he was drafted in the 33rd round in the 2012 draft. And obviously they were, in power within Cleveland's organization in 2013. Taylor was not drafted by this leadership. He was drafted in the 10th round last year in 2016, and both Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro had already moved on. But, if you're trading a player, you better know your horse and the other team's horse. Like, don't trade your players before you know who they are or before you know who you're getting. And you got to be really careful about who you're trading. So obviously the Blue Jays see value in Pannone and Taylor. We don't know what that value is. They do seem like a low return, but they know more than us and they do value those players. So we should probably trust them on that. As far as the Liriano deal goes, like, man, I don't know how Atkins and Shapiro pulled this off, mainly Atkins, probably. but it's an unbelievable deal. They turned in the span of 363 days, they turned Drew Hutchison into three prospects and Nori Aoki. They turned Drew Hutchison into Reese McGuire, Harold Ramirez, Nori Aoki, and Teoscar Hernandez. And Teoscar Hernandez is number five in Toronto's system. I don't know where McGuire or Ramirez place right now. I think they're in the top 15, if I remember correctly. But they're both... The fact that the team could do that in the span of less than a year is really impressive. As you said, Nori Aoki, I think he is kind of a throw-in. He doesn't matter much to the team. I think he will see some playing time off the bench this year. I think they may be able to get some return for him in the offseason. And he does have control. He's a free agent after the 2019 season. So, like you said, I see him as the same as Ezekiel Carrera. He does seem like the same type of player, the same use for the Blue Jays. He does have some speed, although not much. He is older than Carrera. But overall, I think the Blue Jays did a good job. I would have liked to see more from the Smith deal, but I think the Liriano deal kind of made up for it in that extent.
You mentioned what the acquisitions that they got for Hutchison. You also forgot to mention the 1 year that they got of Liriano. I mean, last year, like I mentioned, he was a big part of them going down the stretch. And that wild card game, I'll never forget that. That'll be one of the biggest moments, like biggest relief outings in Jays history.
Yeah, definitely. Like, the fact that they got all these prospects plus Liriano for a year is really impressive. And even if Liriano didn't perform as good as some of may have liked him to, he did perform in 2016 at the tail end of the season, and then he did have a few sparks in 2016, although I guess he didn't fully produce. But another interesting aspect of this is that Liriano had $5 million left on his contract. By trading him, essentially, given his performance, they could have just eaten that and released him. Like, I don't think anyone would have criticized that deal a lot if they just ate that contract and released him, because clearly he wasn't performing. But instead of that, they turn him into Teoscar Hernandez, who's, you know, we've said major league ready right now. He will be in the majors in September. And then they also got Nori Aoki. Like, the full return of this deal, I think, is unbelievable.
This is why people shouldn't be doubting Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro. They clearly know what they're doing.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask you, actually, Blue Jay Center, you said you were going to talk about the possibility of Estrada being on this team next year. And I wanted to bring a little bit of a question to you guys. Do you think Marco Estrada gets traded at the upcoming waiver trade deadline? And obviously, I mentioned before, it's obviously more difficult. But I mean, I think the better he pitches, the more value he's going to get. And I can see, you know, a team maybe wanting to invest in Estrada and, you know, picking him up for the, you know, another 9 starts before the postseason starts. Obviously, we saw the Royals were interested in him. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. And as well as, do you think Jose Bautista would ever consider trading his 10-5 rights to join a contender?
Really, it doesn't really matter to me whether Estrada gets traded or not. Obviously, I care or not, but I think it's fair to say that the Blue Jays are probably not going to make the playoffs this year, anything short of a miracle. And basically, the thing I want to see is possibly bringing Estrada back for next year. There's no reason why the Blue Jays can't do that if they trade him away at the non-waiver trade deadline. I mean, if he has another couple starts like he did against Chicago, now granted that's a AAA roster, but that's another issue. I definitely think that some teams will be interested in him. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, this was a buyer's market, and we'll talk about the other starting pitchers that were traded in a sec. But Estrada, if he was one of the best pitchers in the game prior to the June of this year for the last 2 and a bit years. So I think if he has a couple really nice starts, I don't see why he could be a fifth starter for a team that's trying to make the playoffs or trying to win a division. I mean, you talk about all the fifth starters in the league. I mean, if you don't have to give up a lot to get Marco Estrada, why not? I mean, you look at all the contenders in the league, their fifth starter is probably not better than Marco Estrada is right now. And I think Marco Estrada might be able to turn it around, and if he does, I would not be surprised the slightest to see him be moved. What I want to see is hopefully the Jason gets something back from now and try to re-sign him in the offseason to a short deal as to be their fifth starter, because I see this process as a you need two starters for next year at least. I mean, you can't go into next year with Cesar Valdez and Joe Biagini and Mike Bolsinger as potential starters. You got to bring in someone, and I think bringing in Estrada on a low deal with a chance, with a high success rate, he can come in, and we've seen them success in the past. If he has a good year for them, they might be in the spot next year for them where if they're not contending, they can move him for a little more, something that could be up to more value. So that's something that I would like to see. For Bautista, not only do I'm not sure if he would waive his 10-5 rights. I think if Marshall Spire and Ross Atkins would, who knows what Bautista would be thinking. I just don't think that Bautista has any trade value at all. Like I mentioned, I think it was last week, Jose Bautista, not only is he not the player that he used to be, but he's not a good base runner, never been a great fielder. His arm is, I don't want to say completely gone, but it's not what it used to be. Two things that he was great at, even when he was struggling on defense and couldn't base run, even in 2015 where he had that great year, the power and the on-base. And it's really diminished this year. I mean, Jose Bautista is on pace for, 25 home runs? And that's being generous, I would say. And he's not getting on base the way he used to. He has a slugging percentage under 400. And we don't have to mention the fact that he's gotten a little older and not exactly the, oh, I'm going to walk into your clubhouse and be team-friendly to everyone. We've seen that be disputed in the past. And there are a lot of teams who are purposely not targeting Bautista just because of his personality. I don't think the main issue is will he waive his 10-5 rights. I think the main issue is will someone want him to waive his 10-5 rights. That's my take on this situation.
Yeah, you said defensively he's not good. I would say his arm is still there. He's still good. And offensively, I mean, he is hitting, 215, 216, but he does have an on-base percentage of 325. So he obviously isn't something a team would be like, oh, well, as soon as Mike Trout gets injured, let's acquire Jose Bautista. No, like, it's not that type of thing. But I think that he would have worth to players, to teams rather. And while we're on the topic of the rotation, I think it is an appropriate time to bring up, that R.A. Dickey has cleared revocable waivers. So he is always an option to acquire.
Not sure how many Jays fans would love that move.
R.A. Dickey will always have a place in my heart. Hopefully they don't have to bring back Josh Thole.
Why not? Josh Thole was so good.
The one thing that I'll miss about Ari Dickey the most is all the Jays talk callers calling him to trash him and Mike Wilner saying that, oh, well, no team has a good fit starter.
Yeah. Anyways, do you guys have anything to add or can we wrap it up there?
Just one more thing. When you said Blue Jay Center about bringing Estrada back for next year, I think that's actually the perfect or the ideal thing that the Blue Jays should focus on this offseason because, you know, you look at their rotation for next year, Estrada's a free agent, so if you take that out, they have Stroman, Happ, and Sanchez. And Sanchez, I really don't think you can rely on for a lot until he proves that he can stay healthy for a long period of time. So right now, or so obviously, you would need a fourth and fifth starter, and I think Estrada perfectly fits that. And, you know, like you said, Cesar Valdez, Mike Bolsinger are not ideal candidates to be put into your rotation. So definitely I think Estrada is somebody that the Blue Jays should target in the offseason and maybe even trade him this year if that happens. I don't think that will happen, but then get a return for him and then re-sign him, kind of like what the Yankees did last year with our oldest chap.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Right before we go, I just want to talk about one more topic. I just want to talk about how the trade deadline has affected each AL East team. I come to the conclusion that the Red Sox, they're not the best team in the AL East anymore. I think that title goes to the Yankees. I think picking up Sonny Gray, who's, other than last year, he was an ace for his entire short major league career. I think that's a great move for them. Their bullpen is lethal. If you don't have a lead against them after the fifth or sixth inning, good luck. And they're hitting well. I'm pleased to see that Aaron Judge is no longer placed on a montage on MLB's Instagram account every single day. He's hitting 155 in the second half, I believe, or something like that. But yeah, I think this is going to be the best. I think this is the team that ultimately holds the AL East crown. And also want to talk about the Orioles. The Orioles, they had a terrible trade deadline. They're an under 500 team. Although they've won five of the last six, they want to improve the rotation. So they bring in Jeremy Hellickson, a pitcher with an ERA over 450, who gives up a ton of home runs. They move him to Camden Yards, which is home run friendly. His strikeout to walk ratio is as Wade Miley's and Ubaldo Jimenez. It's not really an upgrade. They gave away a couple prospects and Hyunsoo Kim for him. And also, they wanted to improve the offense, so they signed Tim Beckham, who, aside from these last six games, has been known as a major league bust, a first overall pick, I believe. So I just want to marvel at Dan Duquette's stupidity. Jays almost got Dan Duquette in 2015, I believe. Thank God that didn't happen. And I think the Orioles, after next year, they'll really be in the cellar. They pretty much screwed themselves for years to come. I think this year and years to come is going to be very similar to what the AL East has always been. I mean, you got the Yankees and the Red Sox as powerhouses, and you got teams like the Rays hanging around being all scratchy and just trying to get back in the race but never end up making it. And you got the Jays and the Orioles battling for fourth. That's kind of how it's always been, and history repeats itself once again. What do you guys think about the deadline and how it affects the Jays and the AL East?
The AL East, obviously, you mentioned how the Orioles had a bad trade deadline. I'm not really worried about the Orioles. Obviously, I think they're around the Jays level. They're only two games better than the Jays. But yeah, I agree. The Red Sox and the Yankees are definitely the teams to beat. And I think the Yankees are the team to beat in the AL East, as I also agree that they are going to win the division. Obviously, the acquisitions of Jaime Garcia, Sonny Gray, David Robertson, and Todd Frazier are obviously really good. And, you know, Sonny Gray brought a lot of excitement. That trade brought a lot of excitement to Yankees land. And once it comes to the Red Sox, I don't think that they're going to be close to the – well, I think they're going to be close. I just don't think they're going to beat them. I don't think Addison Reed's going to cut it, him coming in from the bullpen. I just don't think the Red Sox did enough. You know, they got Eduardo Nunez, but I don't think he's going to do enough as well. I just think the Red Sox didn't make as much moves as they hoped, and I think the Yankees just had a better deadline, and that's why I think they're going to win the division. And you know, the Rays obviously are hanging in there. They got Lucas Duda and Dan Jennings, so they did a little bit. They also got Sergio Romo, but that's not really like a blockbuster or any type of appealing trade as the other ones. But yeah, I see the Red Sox and Yankees the teams to beat, but I see the Yankees winning the division.
Mm-hmm. Right now, it looks like it's a two-team race between the Yankees and the Red Sox. I think the Yankees will end up winning it. Obviously, they had a great deadline. They got Sonny Gray, which will really shake things up in their rotation and, in turn, the rest of the AL East. I think the Red Sox will end up in a wild card spot. Whether they win that one game playoff, who knows? But I definitely think they're a good enough team to stay in that wild card race. I mean, the other team is a Kansas City Royals, and they're definitely a better team than the Royals. Past that, the Rays are, they're making a push for it. You know, they finally acquired those influential players. And as of this morning, I believe, or maybe it was, yesterday, they were a half game out of the wild card spot. So they definitely are really, really close, and they really are pushing it. And they, depending how the Yankees and Red Sox perform down the line, you mentioned the Yankees' best player, Aaron Judge, is in a massive slide since the All-Star break. And it's been a fair amount of time since the All-Star break, about 2 weeks. So, you know, if the Yankees slide, the Red Sox slide, I think the Rays may be able to work themselves into the discussion in the AL East, but I think it's a long shot. I think it'll work out as Yankees winning the AL East, Rays, Red Sox. Red Sox definitely a wild card spot. Rays close or in the wild card, and then obviously the Blue Jays and Orioles battling it out for last place in the AL East. As far as the Orioles trade deadline goes, it was not pretty. They were trying to move Zach Britton. It appeared as if they wanted to kind of enter that rebuild stage, but they just didn't get there. They just didn't make any moves. They didn't have any kind of direction. There's been talk about moving Zach Britton in the offseason simply because he's coming off of an injury at the trade deadline. His worth wasn't quite there. Teams probably were hesitant to trade a lot of good players simply because he hasn't shown that he would be healthy. But I do think it's kind of, it was a pretty bad deadline for the Orioles. You have no idea where they're heading. At least with the Blue Jays, you can get some kind of consensus. You know, they're retooling. They're trying to redirect themselves and kind of get around the roadblock that was 2017 and kind of, I don't know where this analogy is going, but get back on the highway and perform well in 2018 and beyond. But you have no idea what the Orioles are doing. It was not a good deadline for them, but definitely in the end, I see the Yankees winning the AL East.
Yeah, I agree with all you guys. The Yankees, to me, look scary now. Like, they acquired Todd Frazier, and then I watched Sonny Gray's start last night. He was good, although his teammates did not play very well for him. I think they had 3 errors in the first inning. But Sonny Gray, I think, is definitely an upgrade in their rotation. I can't remember. Somebody went down it with Tommy John surgery. Michael Pineda. So it'll be interesting to see what the Yankees do beyond with him, because Sonny Gray definitely is under contract for next year. But I think the Yankees, I think, honestly, will win the division, like you guys all said. The Red Sox definitely take first wild card. The Rays easily could take the second wild card. They're only half a game back of the Kansas City Royals right now. And oddly enough, they have one extra win than the Royals, but they have two more losses than them. But I think they eventually will make a strong push for the playoffs. The Orioles, like you guys said, didn't really do anything. They can't move their star closer, so I mean, can't really get anything out of him. They didn't really make any great moves, like you said, the Jeremy Hellickson trade. He's not having a great year this year, but they gave up a few prospects and a major league player. And then the Blue Jays, yeah, they were decent at the trade deadline. You know, I don't expect them to contend this year, but definitely in the future. But yeah, just to wrap that up, I think the Yankees had a tremendous deadline. The Red Sox, I got to be honest, I didn't really hear much out of them, but I still think they'll make the playoffs. The Yankees, I think, will not run away with the division, but they'll eventually get a solid lead and cushion themselves, and then the Rays will most likely make a push, and the Orioles and the Jays, like you guys said, it'll be a battle for fourth place, pretty much.
The Red Sox are the only AL East team that has not played in the wild card game yet, so that's just a fun fact pointing out there.
All right, well, I think we'll conclude the episode there. Thank you to everyone who listened. Again, this podcast is now called Section 138, and thanks again to Blue Jay Center for that clever name. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Google Play. I'm Mark Cauley from 360 Blue Jays News and Bluebird Banter. As always, we were joined by Blue Jays Center, everything Blue Jays and Blue Jays Nation. Catch you next time.